Good morning, this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're talking about miniatures versus theater of the mind.
Right, theater of the mind and miniatures.
So tell us what they are.
Okay, well, miniatures are miniatures, right? They're those tiny little, used to be metal, but now sometimes they're made out of resin or plastic. And you paint them and you flock them and do all kinds of weird stuff with them. And then...
I'm sorry, flock?
Flock, that's putting the little fuzzy stuff on the bottom so it looks like grass or ground. So they call it flocking.
So miniatures are representations of the characters in the game.
Right, right. So
a role-playing game.
A role-playing game. So they're really tied closely to role-playing games. Because way back when D&D first started, D&D pretty much came from miniature warplane.
Wargaming.
Wargaming, right. So, you know, Gary Gygax, Dave Arneson, and Gary Gygax, they were playing miniature games, miniature rules, and they even came up with their own. Gary Gygax came out with Chainmail, and from Chainmail became D&D, original D&D. And so what happened is that, of course, they were using minis with their early role-playing games. And they were, you know, it was an extension of Chainmail, which is a miniature game. So naturally, miniatures was part of the role-playing game. And people used, I'm sure they used scenery, they used terrain, even a playmat if they didn't have all that other stuff. So what I'm saying is that minis and RPGs are closely tied together from the very beginning. So other games like Boot Hill, you know, other TSR games, and even other games from other companies like Tunnels and Trolls, they all had miniature lines attached to their name.
Gamma World.
Gamma World was one of them. You know, Space Opera had a line of miniatures, even though they were a small company. So not necessarily they owned the miniatures, but other companies... I mean, like TSR did. I'm sure TSR made their own miniatures because they were a big company back then. But there was other companies that made miniatures for these games.
Because people like miniatures.
Well, they like miniatures, and that was part of the game. That was just natural that they would use miniatures.
Because you're playing D&D, you're talking and talking, and it's a talkie-talkie, as Augustine would say. And and then when it comes to things that you, it's kind of nice to see a representation of your character standing
right
in the middle of the table.
Right, and it makes it easier to use, you know, it kind of makes it easier to use your imagination. So, like, you know, early games were early Dungeons & Dragons games were Dungeons & Dragons, right? You went into a dungeon, you killed their monsters and took their stuff. And so positioning of where you were was kind of important. You know, it helped you figure out, oh, I can see, I know where I am in a room or in a certain situation.
It still is important.
It still is. It is. In fact, people still use miniatures to this day for that reason. So, but what I'm saying is that when D&D first came out, it was just natural that they would use miniatures. And as time progressed and different rules came out, and everybody kind of mimicked D&D, right? They were using that kind of idea, and they made their own role-playing games.
I could say that it's like Tolkien writing Lord of the Rings, and then
exactly. Lots
of science fiction.
And then you have, you know...
imitating it.
Then you had a Sword of Shannara, right? In 1977, yes. Which is totally a ripoff of Tolkien. But anyway, so exactly, you got a lot of people mimicking that kind of idea. And so a lot of the games were like miniature heavy, or they used miniatures, or they used grid, you know, on a playmat to be able to figure
they
out what you...
drew the map and decide, and that's where you figured out where you were going.
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, it just helps you figure out where everything is spatially.
It's
right?
A representation.
So a few years ago, well, you know, quite a few years ago now, but, you know, independent game companies started coming out, right? And so they were less dependent on combat and more dependent on interaction between characters and more role-play heavy. And so miniatures, you know, not king fell out of favor, but they weren't used so much because you don't really need miniatures to do in a social encounter, right? Doing a social encounter like at a dance or something, you don't need to move your figures and as you're dancing. No, you're just, the main reason you're there is to interact with other characters, non-player characters, and figure out things, usually. So that's what using miniatures is, right? Basically, standard. A lot of people have been doing it for years and years, and people use scenery, people use terrain. I don't do all that because I don't paint that many miniatures, and I can't do terrain, and I don't have enough space to put all that stuff in. But some GMs do. They use this elaborate system of scenery and terrain, and, you know, they got little trees, little barns, and little houses to make up the game table. So what's theater of the mind? Theater of the mind is kind of like, not the opposite, but theater mind is using your imagination, and instead of figures on a board or miniatures on a board on a tabletop, you're just using your imagination. The GM describes the scene, and the players, you know, ask questions, or they, you know, and usually, I would think in this, in modern era, a lot of players have a lot of narrative control, or narrative, what was that term that the other guy was using in his paper? Narrative authority? Was that it? Anyway, so players can come up with their own stuff. They can come up with ideas, and they can insert things into the situation or into the setting.
So you're saying that it's easier to do this without using miniatures?
Oh, theater mind, you don't use miniatures. You just use
imagination. I understand that, but your point is...
I think like, for example, I remember reading in Feng Shui, and this is the first time I tried using the theater mind was in Feng Shui, because the person who wrote the book says, you know, get rid of maps, don't use figures, just use your mind. And because that allows, and then he says that allows players to come up with stuff. Because once you draw a map, players go, okay, I know what everything's in it. Like, let's say I draw a map, and I have a treasure chest here, and I have a table here, and chairs there. Okay, the idea is that basically closes off adding anything to the setting or anything to the situation. So players can't say, well, I want to grab a chest of drawers that over here and throw it at the bad guys. They won't even think about it because they look at the map and they'll say, oh, there's no, all there is tables and chairs.
That's not necessarily true.
I don't know if...
It's like when you read a book. Some books have a lot of description in it. Like, let's say, Robert Jordan. Okay. He tells you a lot of stuff about the world and everything in it. But still, everybody has their own imagination in their head and come up with their own ideas about what is really happening there. Everybody gets a different idea.
Right.
And if you draw a room and you tell people where stuff is, that doesn't mean they're not going to make up a dresser or a chest of drawers sitting
but
there.
But it's more likely is what the argument was. I'm not saying that
I understand the argument. I'm just telling you, when you're playing with real people.
With real people.
It changes things.
I like playing with fake people or non-real people. So that was the idea that he put forth. And I kind of agree with him. I know what you're saying. But I kind of agree with that. Once you put miniatures and scenery, let's say you're an intensive scenery person, you're not gonna think of, you know, you're just, as a player, you may find it like you're stepping on GM's toes by inserting things that are not there physically on the tabletop.
And that's an individual player, because lots of players would on toes.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I agree with you on that one. So that's theater mind is no miniatures, no maps, just you and the GM and the players talking about the situation, and that's it. And what I think what allows is allows for players to be able to use their imagination more and be able to hopefully what the whole point of this is to be able to add stuff to the scene, add stuff to the situation. So in Feng Shui, for example, I know I've used the construction site scene before, but they say use a construction site scene. So in a construction site, and I said exactly this before, I forget what podcast it was or what episode, but the GM or the author said, you know, don't make a map, and you just say what kind of situation it is, like construction site scene, and then you might describe a couple things, or like there's a large crane here, and there's a set of a building, cement blocks there, or big old round, you know, what do you call those big old round pieces?
So you are describing things for them.
Some things, and then you just leave it alone, right? And then somebody says, well, is there, you know, that crane, does it have the player, does it have that line sticking down? Now, normally, I don't think a crane would do that, right? They would probably, they would move it up so it wouldn't be swinging. But the person goes, is it down so I can jump on it and swing and do something amazing across the play area? And as a GM, you think, well, that's a great idea. That'll add, you know, to a swashbuckling, crazy, frenetic game like Feng Shui. It would add to that game. So, of course, you would say yes. So that gives the players the ability to come up with stuff that you hadn't described. And so it would make it easier to run that type of game.
I understand what you're saying. And I think that both...
And in that example, I hate to cut you off, but in that example, it didn't really work well, because that was the first time the players got to experience that kind of, you know, open environment. So it didn't work out too good because they were used to the old style of playing D&D where I would describe everything and they would, you know, they would react to everything I described. So in that case, like I said, it was kind of difficult for those players to move from D&D to a more game where the players had more input in the situation.
I thought the last time you told that story that the players came up with ideas to use, and so you thought that it did help the situation.
They might have, but not as many players did it. I mean, there was a few people who took to it like a duck to water, but I think there was some people who were like holding back. They were just using the scenery that I had or the situation that I had presented and then used that. So, I mean, it was successful, I guess, in a certain sense because a few players did, but the majority of players just you know, used whatever was there, what I had described or what other people had described. So it's kind of like, you know, I think it's kind of hard for older players like me and older GMs to...
I think you should just talk about yourself and not other people there, dude.
But I think I think it's hard because if you played a certain way for an extended period of time, then it's very hard to switch over, to change.
I think you might be wrong. I think people can switch over easily. It depends on the person. Some people, like when you read books, lots of people read the same book and have a totally different vision in their head of what's happening. So whether you're using miniatures or not using miniatures, sometimes people come up with ideas that you totally don't think they do or would come up with. All I have to say is you should realize this, whether you set the scene or not, players are going to come up with things that you're not expecting. The example that I have is when we were playing with the kids a long time ago, when they were like 8 or 9, and you had us up against a dragon.
I don't remember. Go ahead.
I think it was a frost dragon or something, but we were in a cave and your nephew decided to And what happens? And he says, I'm going to punch the dragon in the nose. Nobody is expecting a player to punch a dragon in the nose. So you never know what people are going to come up with, right?
Okay, he was kind of a loose cannon. And I think, he was an angry loose cannon. He was an angry little boy. I don't know why. But, you know, he had a lot of hostility. And he would do things like that and not thinking of the consequences, right? You know, the dragon was asleep, theoretically. And two, they all knew he was asleep, and they were all knew that this dragon could easily gobble them up very easily, and he decides to basically threaten his whole party and do something crazy. That I consider that the Stan effect. There was this crazy player back when I was, you know, early teenager, and my brother had started playing at a scout house where he was a scout. And so he was, you know, he was very well regarded, my brother. And they gave him the keys, and we would play there over the weekend. And it was behind American Legion Hall. So we go there, like, every Saturday or Sunday, I forget what day, and play. And one of the players was Stan. He was also a scout, believe it or not. But he was a crazy guy. He would do crazy stuff. And sometimes he'd do crazy stuff and upset the whole party because he'd get that kind of, he would do those kinds of actions, right? We're playing D&D. He would, you know, we'd come across a city guard, he'd try to kill one of them, right? And so, you know, and we're like, okay, what are you doing? So that was one of those moments. That was a what are you doing moment, punching the dragon in the face.
But you have that with lots of games. You have people running off after bugbears accidentally, not telling anybody.
Well, that's true. But that's part of role-playing. Right, that whole you can do anything you want type of deal.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Theater of the mind, I think, is a good combination with miniatures. I don't think it has to be one or the other.
I understand.
I think I understand theater of the mind, and we've played in games with people that didn't have any miniatures or props.
Oh yeah, we played in Jeff's game.
Yes, I don't remember what it was called.
It's called Through the Breach.
Yes,
it's a game, role playing game based on a miniature game called Malifaux. Which is kind of weird because you're supposed to use miniatures, right? Because it's a miniature game. I mean, it's a role-playing game based on a miniature game. Because they have these fantastical miniatures. They're really neat. I mean, they're amazing miniatures.
We didn't use miniatures.
No, we didn't. Did you even make a map?
No.
Did he have a map?
No.
He didn't, huh? Not at all. But I'm thinking that Jeff usually runs those type of games where he doesn't have a map. In fact, he was running a Warhammer 40K RPG. I forget which one it was. It wasn't Rogue Trader. It was one of the other two. Anyway, so I walked into the game and I sat and listened to him. And there was no map. There was no miniatures. There was five or six players around the table. You know, they were dealing with the situation at hand. And that's the kind of game he ran. There's a lot of GMs that don't run, that don't use miniatures at all. And that's the idea of Theater of the Mind. Now, I don't know. I'm going to cut you off. I don't know why. I don't know what his reason is to allow people to use their imagination more. Or not. I don't know. I don't know what unless he just doesn't like using miniatures. Because you got to cart them around, stuff like that. This was at a convention. I'm not saying that you have to use one or the other. I'm just saying that they offer two different ways of representing the situation on a game table. So I think I've heard from things I read that newer players really take to the Theater of the Mind situation. They're able to exercise their imagination easier if they don't have any preconception of how games are supposed to be played. But I think most people use a little bit of both when they GM, right? They have miniatures. You know, I use miniatures only because sometimes it's very difficult for me to explain exactly this or describe the situation. And sometimes players don't get what I'm saying, right? They'll say, how big is the room again? Or where are we? And all this other stuff. So I use miniatures and a playmat to give a general idea of where people are. And that allows players to have a better grasp on the situation.
It's kind of like using maps too, right? Because the map shows you where you are.
That's true. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's... You know, I don't think there's one way or the other that people exclusively use. I think they kind of use a mix of both. I think, especially nowadays, I think people are totally okay with just a simple map. A mat, like a play mat where you can draw basic squares of the room and dimensions. And people can put themselves where they want to be. And then you put the monster where you want them to be. And I think that really works out really well.
I think it depends on the game you're playing too, because... The Star Trek game that we played in the last convention we went to had all kinds of props and things that made it really cool.
Yeah. Well, they were using, what is it? They were using Battle Stations 2.0, I think, which is a miniature, they call it a hybrid game, but it's really a miniature game. And they have some RP aspects to it. But in that game they made it really a role-playing game because they used the shipboard tactic type stuff at the very beginning, but then they took us down to the world and there was no, you know, they used scenery and figures, but there was no grid like there was when we were on the spaceship. And we weren't counting like, oh, I got to count how many spaces we got to go. Remember? And then they had two DMs, remember? The lady did one, and then when the guy took over, he didn't use any of those funky, you know, you have two squares of movement and all those, or 10 squares of movement. So that's an interesting take. And then, but it was a fun game. I liked it. And, you know, both ways worked equally well. And for me, when I run a Star Trek game, like when you're on a spaceship, you know, flying around, I don't have the miniatures on a board or anything. I just say you're on a bridge, right? It don't matter where you are on the bridge. And then all you're doing is doing commands, right? Like, oh, I'm gonna pump up the shields and do all this other stuff. And as you play, it's more of a role-playing aspect for me.
Yes, but if you watch Star Trek, then you know where you are on the bridge. So
you unless you don't watch Star Trek, then you don't know where things are.
And those people don't always go with your role-playing aspect. They ask you lots of questions.
That's true. But okay, so you have that situation where I think people can use either way. I like using miniatures only because, like, sometimes my descriptions don't get off too well with players. And I think it's happened more than one occasion where people go, okay. And I have a hard time describing certain situations. Or they're just not listening or whatever. I don't know what the situation is, but sometimes they'll say, where exactly is this thing? And so, you know, even when I'm trying not to use a map, even when I'm trying just to use Theater Mind, sometimes I quickly scribble something on a piece of paper. And so, this is what it looks like real quick. And I think a lot of online playing has gone from miniatures, because, you know, you could use miniatures on a online playing aspect. But for the most part, a lot of games use Theater of Mind, or just, you know, it's more of a role play heavy environment than a tabletop where you're moving the miniatures on a grid.
There's all those tabletop things online, though, that you do, Roll 20 and stuff like that, where you actually make maps and...
Yeah, you could. Yes, exactly. And you could have tokens and stuff like that to represent figures, and you could make it so it's basically like a D&D game where you're moving squares and stuff. In fact, when you're moving miniatures or the token on the computer screen, you can make it so it stays within squares, and if you try to put it in between like the intersection of two squares, it'll snap to the center of another square. And you can do weird things, like, you know, you can see how far things are by clicking and dragging, and it's pretty cool. But, you know, it takes a lot of setup time before you play to have all that ready to go.
So those GMs that make their own scenery and set up their own little towns and their...
Oh, man, those guys are amazing.
So they do that as a way to describe the scene to set up the atmosphere.
I think a lot of those, definitely that, right? They definitely, you know, they don't have to describe what the tree looks like. They just put the tree there. They don't have to describe what the building looks like. You know, they have that building there and all this other stuff. But those people really like working on... I think they really like working on scenery and, like, you know, doing that kind of stuff. Anyway, you know, that kind of war gamer aspect of playing, because if you like, we've gone to miniature when we go to conventions, we go to the miniature area, and some of those people are like really dedicated to their terrain, to the look of their miniatures, and you know, they're trying to make them as realistic as possible.
Yes, they put a lot of time and effort into it.
And that's a lot of time and effort, right?
And then they get out their pencil and paper and their rulers and proceed to play a really long game with little people.
Yes. I mean, I've played in a few miniature games, and they're a lot of fun, but they are long games. I mean, you're going to take all that time to set up a board that takes like an hour, and then you're going to only play for like a half an hour. That doesn't usually happen.
No.
No. And then, you know, you want to spend a lot of time at that game table if you took a lot of time to paint and to make it and then to transport it and then to set it up.
And they all have friends that like to do the same thing, so.
You would hope. So in that situation, of course, people, if they role play, they have all this stuff and they would like to utilize it, right? They like to be able to use it.
But even in Jeff's game, had something other than, even though there was no map or anything, the cards instead of dice was a big thing for that game, because the cards were like the focal point of what you could or couldn't do, how you succeeded. So that was a different aspect to the, I mean, it was less, it had something to do with Theater of the Mind as you're describing it, but it was more just a role-playing game with these cards that instead of rolling dice,
right,
everything depended on whether you could or couldn't do what you wanted to. Depending more on the cards, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think the problem he had, the mistake he made, was that he didn't bring any decks. He only had one deck of cards. And I think in that game system, everybody should have a deck of cards, because what happens is every character takes a certain number of cards out of the deck. Like my character was supposed to have like a queen of diamonds, a four of clubs, and so they give you all these cards to make your little deck, your own personal deck, and then you use that deck to flip over the cards. You don't use that whole big deck.
Oh, I don't. I.
Yeah. So what happens is, because you know what's in your deck, you can kind of like play the odds. Okay, I've already pulled this card. I already pulled that card. So I know I have. You know, you only have limited, you know, let's say you have 10 cards. So in that deck, you're like, okay, I still have a queen of this. I still have a, so, you know, you can kind of play the odds, kind of. as to, you know, how fantastical, how hard of a task you're going to try to attempt. But I'm not a card counter, and that would drive me nuts. So what it does is limits your, instead of a roll of dice of, a, let's say, a 20-sided die from 1 to 20, you have five different
numbers
that you, cards that you have available to you. So you would use that knowledge, which is kind of metagaming, though. You would use that knowledge to see, well, if I'm going to do something crazy, I should do it now that I know that there's three, you know, like face cards. What do they call the king, queen, and...
Face cards.
Face cards? Okay. There's three face cards in here compared to when my deck is full. I only have four face cards, and the rest are all lower cards. But that's game mechanics and metagaming kind of situation. I don't know if just using cards instead of dice, it makes it a more of a miniature type game. But I think that one is definitely, you usually play with miniatures simply because I think it comes from a miniature background. But maybe not. It went fine without using miniatures with Jeff.
So what is the best way?
Oh, I don't think there is a best way. I'm not going to say that at all. I mean, I think you should play with what you're comfortable with. But if you want to stretch out a little bit out of, you know, usually people play with miniatures, I think. A lot of D&D players do. Because D&D kind of makes you want to, kind of forces you into that situation, right? Because they tell you move how many squares. You know, they tell you move 30 feet, but that's in 5-foot squares, right? So it's kind of geared toward using miniatures on a grid. And so what happens is that, you know, D&D is the most popular role-playing game out there. By the numbers, then a lot of people are playing it. So playing that kind of game and then moving to a different kind of game, a different situation or a game where people use Theater of the Mind more, I think might be a tougher transition. But if you're a GM and you kind of experiment with this Theater of the Mind kind of stuff and ask your players, you know, you bust into a room and you say, well, it's a bedroom. And then you go, they'll ask you, what do you see? And you ask, well, what do you think will be in a bedroom? I mean, you could, you know, spread the ability to, or not the ability, but the power to add or to describe things that are in the room as a player. That's kind of theater mind, kind of creeping into the grid style, mini style of playing.
Okay.
No?
I don't know.
Well, do you think I use theater of the mind in our game?
I don't know what that means. Well, I mean, you make us role play things without using miniatures, but okay. The miniatures come out when there's a battle.
Well, yeah, I think in most situations battle, because it's such a usually life and death situation for the character. People don't want to. Oh, I didn't know that was there, or I didn't see that. You know, when you described it, I didn't know that was so close to me. You know what I mean? So Do you want to forego those kind of arguments or those kind of situations?
I think people like to see their representation on the map.
Do you like to see the figure?
Yeah.
And see what the monster is? Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem too. Like you said, if you just use Theater of the Mind, my description to five players, each player might think something just a little bit different. You know, just like when reading Robert Jordan's book.
Every player will think something different.
Yes. I mean, they don't think exactly the same. Unless they do a conference and confer with each other. Oh, this is what we see, right? This is what you see? Oh, okay, we're in agreement. But that doesn't happen.
That would be a hard one.
So, Theater of Mind or Minis. I think a good combination of both is fun for a lot of people. I think it's easier for some GMs to be able to describe with the help of miniatures on a tabletop. But if you use Theater of the Mind solely as the only way to run your game, I think it's a viable way of doing it. It can be just as fun. So I think that's it. We don't got nothing else to say on the situation. Use either way you like, either method,
or combine them.
I like combine them a little bit, just a little bit. I think they both have merits and both have advantages and disadvantages. That's it. See you next week. This is Gaming's Perspective with Saul
and Jolene,
and you have a good day.